Do you ever feel like the agency business needs a little bit more optimism and maybe a few more fresh ideas? Welcome to The Immortal Life of Agencies. This is the podcast that spotlights the visionaries and changemakers who are shaping the future of our industry. Here we don't dwell on the doom and gloom. Instead, we celebrate the leaders who've been there, done that, and are happy to share what they've got right, as well as what they've got wrong. Each episode delivers short, punchy conversations with some of the biggest, boldest, and brightest minds in our world, along with practical takeaways you can put to work in your agency today. So if you're looking for stories of positivity and progress, you're in the right place. Welcome to the show. Joining me on the show today is none other than Toby Southgate, the global CEO of We Are Social. Now, Toby is a rare beast in as much as I don't think I've ever seen another global CEO, or frankly, any agency CEO, spend as much time heroing work from other agencies as Toby does. And I think as a cheerleader for the industry, it really sets him apart. There's a lovely quote in this episode, which I think you'll enjoy as well. It's about the competitors of agencies. It's not other agencies. It's the leaders and the boardrooms that don't believe in creativity. And what a wonderful rousing cry that is. He also talks about what holds agencies back and the fragility of creative culture, and also how he's learned to lead given all the constraints that agencies face. It really is the perfect conversation for a show about optimism in agencies. Toby Southgate, welcome to the show.
How are you doing, Rob? Good to see you and thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. So let's get straight into this. You are the newly minted global CEO of We Are Social. And I think it takes us straight into a conversation about creativity and what that means. So you tell me, what is a creative business?
You start with the big questions, don't you? I've always thought about it pretty simply. We're an industry, marketing generally is an industry that's really good at making up new words to describe things that are broadly similar or evolutions of or adjacent to the core task of marketing, which in my view is to help businesses and brands grow. And the creative element is in the way in which you approach the problems that you get to solve or the briefs that land on your desk. It's the approach to solving that problem and the approach to growth that for me has always been the exciting and creative bit. It can't only be the output. So yeah, I've always tried to find things. And I think the best agency work, the best agency relationships, the best brands and businesses are built on finding new and interesting ways to solve challenges and problems as they grow. That for me is the sort of core central pillar, the sort of centrifugal force of anything creatively oriented. It's progress and change and evolution and growth.
Interesting. And I'm immediately reminded about one of my favorite things about you, which I think is very unusual, is that I don't know of another senior agency CEO who is so willing to hero the work of other agencies, even competitive agencies. I see this from you on LinkedIn, and frankly, I don't see it enough from other people, but there's a real sense that you are a champion of creativity rather than just a champion of the business that you happen to work for. So it feels like it means something to you, that it's something you're passionate about. Am I reading that right?
1,000%. Yeah. It bugs me. I'm being polite. It's one of the worst behaviors.
It's a safe space. Don't worry.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's one of the worst behaviors of our industry as a whole, that we need to be able to champion each other. Because honestly, it's not easy out there. And, you know, if I pick on, I think I sort of always had this, I can never really understand or get comfortable with judgment of other people's work, other agencies' work and what other clients were doing, because unless you're in the process, unless you've seen the brief, met the client, tried to understand the business or the intention behind it, you don't really have an educated sense of the context in which the work was made or in which the relationship is trying to be established. So that for me was, you know, I never really liked seeing people judge or shit on other people's work. And yet it is a kind of, you know, it's a prevalent behavior. And more, you know, I'm seeing, you know, I think as we more and more, I do see people getting a little more comfortable celebrating great things and supporting each other through difficult times. It hasn't been an easy ride probably since before COVID. But there's a former colleague who probably, you know, it's his quote that I think about when I do go out of my way to celebrate, enjoy, support, comment, just say good things about great work when I see it, whoever it comes from. And it was Rob Reilly when he was the creative lead, the creative chairman at McCann World Group. It's now global CCO of WPP. Rob said something along the lines of, you know, the competition is not other agencies. The competition is leaders and boardrooms that don't believe in creativity, in that very broad-based definition of creativity that I shared earlier, right? Not about whether they like the ad or the execution or the script or the music or the film or whatever it is you're making. We're fighting for our role, right? We're fighting for a creative conversation to be had and embraced at the leadership levels of our clients' businesses and therefore across the whole sort of commercial marketing landscape. So yeah, it's a very big deal for me. And I think the more we do it, the better we get, because at our core, this industry is also about optimism. We've got to believe the future is going to be better than the past, and that we have a role in creating that change, that positive shift, creating a better future. You know, that's central actually to almost all growth or progress or evolution. If we're pessimistic about the position that we're in, or we're screaming at one agency for going in with a lower rate card, or at that client for running a pitch that they knew was going to end up with, you know, agency XYZ winning it, or, you know, judging a piece of work that finally makes it out into the world. It's bloody hard to make great work and get it out. You know, then we're doing our whole industry a disservice. And ultimately, I just don't think it reflects well on the people that are happy dumping on stuff.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think I love that you mentioned optimism. You know, that's what this podcast is all about. You know, if we can sort of open up different kind of conversation, or if we can provide a little bit more momentum to push a door that's already ajar, and just help make something new and interesting and different happen, even by surfacing past mistakes, but just something about moving the game forward, I think is really appealing. I'm curious about the creativity thing again, because I've got on my hobby horse about this probably on far too many episodes of this show. Just about the way that we talk about creativity within mainstream advertising. It just seems to be unimaginative, as if this idea of, you know, creativity is our special source or our secret source, which of course is even worse. And then everybody claims that it's their secret source, which is neither a secret nor any sort of differentiator. But I'm curious about your take on this. What do you think agencies get wrong? And obviously I'm asking this in a positive sense. What do they get wrong when they talk about creativity?
I mean, I think you've said, so I'm going to try and quote you semi-accurately, at least, that the agency landscape is not oversupplied, it's under-differentiated. Now, if you want to have a debate, you could pick a side. Other people might want to pick apart either side of that position. I think the oversupply is often felt, but it's rarely real. It's more a perception than a reality, in my sense. And it goes back to what I said earlier about the ability we have to create words that are largely meaningless, right? Or can themselves be picked apart to replicate or exaggerate or overpromise a capability that you don't quite have, where actually, you know, if you boil it down to its simple terms, if we're here to help brands and businesses grow, the creativity lies in the approach to solving that growth problem. And therefore, the oversupply is probably about the overuse or misuse of appropriate, narrow, focused, sharp language to describe. And I hate to say justify, but we are often having to justify what we do and the value of what we do, and an inability to effectively differentiate. I think that's a landscape-wide challenge, right? Because there are, if you look at it through the sort of fundamental lenses, you know, if we're all here to solve those business challenges using smart approaches and ultimately end up with a piece of work or a relationship that contributes to the growth of that brand or that business, then by definition, we're all sort of doing the same thing. But it's the how that differentiates, or the who that differentiates. And I think that is something that all agencies can and should find, that many have either lost or been unable to share and cascade effectively as they have grown, or that they've forgotten or overlooked, or are just too wrapped up in keeping moving to really think hard about what it is they need to differentiate themselves now and tomorrow, rather than last week and the year before and, you know, 10 years ago when influencer marketing wasn't a thing. But actually, it's just the way of describing something that's always been a part of the marketing mix in specific channels that didn't used to exist. So yeah, we're really good at creating excuses, but I couldn't agree more actually with that quote. Your thoughts on all age, if you say creativity is your differentiator, your superpower, your secret source, then you should by definition be kind of fucked already, right? It's not and can't be the only thing. What is it about your approach to creativity? What is the secret sauce and how you deliver it, approach it, staff it, resource it, how you work to deliver against the brief? Where do you start with the work? How do you price the work? You know, all these things are opportunities to to differentiate and to meet the brief from the client or build the relationship with the client in creative ways, regardless of what the output is. So I think it is a failure, you know, it's a failure of imagination, actually. And I think therefore a golden, you know, is an opportunity for every agency to really decide and define what it is they want to be great at. Loads of reasons why that doesn't happen. Being great and huge and 100 years old with thousands of offices is tough consistently, right? It's easier if you've got six people around the table and you're building it from scratch, but it's hard to maintain. And so reminding yourselves of it constantly and frequently as you, as an agency, grow and evolve, I think that's the opportunity and the bit that's most often overlooked.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I'm fond of saying that positioning is dead, and actually, you know, agencies differentiate on the strength of their value proposition. And I think that that's a problematic sentiment for lots of reasons, because we tend to throw around words like mission and North Star and purpose, and not just positioning a proposition. We chuck them around like confetti, like they mean the same things. And once you don't take the time and trouble, to your point, to slow down and really be explicit about the role that these core business decisions take, you know, in your journey to consistent growth and trying to build a culture that you want and kind of creating the agency you want to run. If you don't do that, then you remain a hostage to fortune. And I think that's when we see these very empty or very superficial or very generic so-called positioning statements, which are often very inward looking and they don't really mean anything. I think to your point, we're doing everybody a disservice if we allow that stuff to pass as, you know, as your business strategy if you're an agency leader.
Well, I mean, look, all of those brand assets, if you, whatever you call them, strategic elements, strategic components, you know, vision, mission, values, you know, EVP, whatever. None of that matters if no one in your business understands why you have them, how they're supposed to behave to deliver them. Very little of it makes any difference unless you're prepared to talk about it, not only internally, but also to some extent externally. And there's very little that hasn't been done or explored before. And you're also dealing with bodies of human beings, right? Agencies are made up of humans. And therefore, you know, we have relatively short memories and we're emotional beings and we need to be reminded and communicate clearly and frequently about the things we're here to do. And there's a great, I used to work quite a lot in, let's say, brand strategy, the more traditional discipline of brand strategy. And I remember being told very early when we were working on a vision, mission, values project, right? A brand strategy project. Yeah, and there's such a commonality of words that are used to describe values because they're usually aspirational. We're aiming to do this rather than based in fact from within the business. And this company, I won't say who it was, but a client, a big commercial real estate business, was talking about how its values were respect. I'm going to try and get this right. Respect, integrity, service, excellence. They use the acronym RISE a lot. Our RISE values are really important to us. And one of the consultants on our team said, well, that's really interesting. So, and found a clip from a piece of film footage from Enron. I think it was from the Enron documentary. And three of those four values were the corporate values of Enron and therefore were clearly not being delivered to any degree at any level within the organization, let alone understood. And so you can have all those things, but honestly, they're way less meaningful than how you build your business, how you bring people together and how you make great things, great work. And that, you know, you can have all the strategy you like, but ultimately if you haven't got great people and you're not making great work, you won't have happy clients. And sooner or later, there's no business to protect.
Exactly. And I think that's a really lovely segue into perhaps some of the learnings from your career, because, and I mean this with the greatest of respect, you are a seasoned senior agency leader. So you've seen a few things. Just let it pass, Toby. Let it go. And, you know, you've done some fantastic things. And of course, you've just started another really fascinating, chunky global role. So I'm going to assume that you've learned a few things along the way, but particularly on the theme of creativity. I suppose, how do you sort of creatively energize an agency when you arrive? You know, you've got your own views. You want to be mindful of what's gone before, whether it's a turnaround or whether it's a, you know, steady as she goes, or whether it's a, you know, good to great kind of brief that you have. What's your first thing that you look at when it comes to the creativity and the energy around the place?
You know, I don't know if there's I know there isn't a recipe to this, right? Because I'm sure I've got as many things wrong as I've got right in any job I've had, certainly any leadership job. But I think there are a few, you know, there are a few indicators And the first is, you know, it will help you define what the sort of response to the task really is. And the first and most important of those is what is the product? Like, what is the work right now? What's visible? Is any of it famous? Is any of it influential? Is it winning awards? Is, you know, a sort of lazy proxy or byproduct of making great work? Are clients happy? Do other agencies, you know, admire or aspire to be doing that kind of work? So you need to get a sense of where the agency is. And the bigger the agency or the bigger the business, the harder that is, because consistency is tough, right? And you might have examples in any kind of scaled business, but you've got more than one office. It's sort of exponentially harder to make sure that every office or every group of people or every client is making work at the same level. That very rarely happens. But you need to sort of set an understanding of what the benchmarks are. What are you aiming to achieve? And people internally, my experience, are usually the better judges of that. You know, you get a sense quite quickly talking to people working across the functions and certainly in creative and strategy functions. What's the best work we're making right now? And actually, it's very rarely the most visible or most awarded work. But you get a sense quite quickly of the culture of the place or the things the agency might prioritize when you ask, what's the brief or the client you'd like to be working on? That tells you a lot about where you are. Because if the answer is everybody's waiting for the next pitch brief, you know, a new client, you've probably got some kind of challenge. So assessing that's really important. And then the other thing is, you know, I spend a lot of time outside the agency, right? Wherever I've been, I think it's really important. Whatever business I've been in, part of loving the industry and loving supporting and celebrating people doing well in it is that it's a friendly, fun, engaging place. So that means outside of agencies, there are a lot of people that want to give you opinions. There's a lot you can read. There are industries built adjacent to the agency client relationship. There's a very active trade press in most markets. There are pitch consultants, intermediaries, analysts, recruiters. You can get a really easy barometer quite quickly of the prevailing sense of how that business is doing, what that agency stands for, what's the quality of the people, the clients, the relationships, the work. And all those things sort of inform that road mapping. I'm right in that stage now, right? You know, it's day 10 today in my new role. I've had a couple of months doing as much of background reading, research, you know, all the onboarding stuff to not only get the impression of the business from the inside as to what our priorities should be, but from the outside as well. And that's a really useful and interesting exercise. And then you've also got the opportunity as a new leader to ask all the dumb questions, right? You know, why did we do this? Why did we do that? Did we pitch for this? And we're, you know, looking at pitch work is always super interesting because win or lose, it represents some kind of, you know, gesture as to what the agency says about itself and how it believes it's differentiating. That's your earlier point, right? It's never been good enough, but it's, you know, creds decks tell you a lot about how proud an agency is of the story that it's got. And I guess I would just say I've seen them all and I'm a pretty good judge, I think, of what's a compelling story. I've either been delivering those stories or writing those stories or understanding why our story didn't win and therefore sort of digging into the other stories for a really long time. And there is, I'll just say there's a whole spectrum out there from the utterly predictable, utterly dry, like, okay, so I know what's coming next. I'm on slide 2 and it's your map of capabilities. So I can't wait for slide 3, which is going to be either the people in charge of those capabilities or the clients that you deliver those capabilities for. And then the following chart will be the other one. And then you're going to show me 10 or 12 client logos on a slide. And then there'll be a big statement about what that's a way of doing agency credentials. And at the other end of the spectrum are the ones that sort of bring you in from the beginning that give you a sense, not of what our answer might be to your challenge, Mr. or Mrs. Client, but, you know, a commitment to the partnership, a commitment to the response of the brief and a solution to a problem that you probably haven't seen before. And then we're going to spend the rest of the time talking about why it might be right or wrong. And so there's very compelling ways to do it and there's very dry and predictable ways to do it. But any agency's credentials presentation or pitch deck will give you a good smell as to how far away we might be or how close we might be to really cracking something and building from it. So those are the kinds of things that I'm looking at the moment.
Yeah, I love it. And as someone who's still a fully paid up member of two unions, one of them is the Goalkeepers Union and the other one is the New Business Directors Union, I remain a deep lover of the excitement and the best foot forward nature of new business. I think as much as so much of the sort of new business industrial complex is messy and toxic and wasteful, I think the joy of an agency coming together and putting its best brains on something that it really aspires to win when it's been well chosen and it's a great fit and so on. So I love all that. I'm really curious about the tension that I imagine there must emerge, because you know when a leader goes into a new role and you know they look around, they look under rocks, they ask, you know, the difficult questions and the silly questions, they talk to stakeholders, they look at where the agency's at its best and where it's maybe not so much. I imagine a tension emerges where, you know, you've got to balance perhaps the degree to which this is, in your opinion, a sort of turnaround or a reinvention type brief versus, you know, the degree to which the team around you, you know, the senior lieutenants are aware that it may well be worse than they think or better than they think. So I suppose there's a sort of a building of alignment or an assessment of just how fast and how far to push with your agenda as you set those immediate priorities. So I'd love to know how you maybe balance those tensions when you step into that kind of leadership role.
Again, I don't think there's a single answer, but I do believe, and I've, you know, this new role, 10 days in to We Are Social, and I wouldn't have been offered the job or have taken the job if everything was absolutely perfect and there is no change required. Right. And that's as true of We Are Social, by the way, as it is of any other business on the planet. I think there is always change required, even if the change is optimization, because you're doing amazing things and exclusively amazing things. And you have a queue of talent around the door and a queue of clients wanting to throw money at you. Things can always be a little bit better on any number of metrics. Finding the right metrics to improve is that challenge. But I think there's always an opportunity, and the thing that I think is most important to really understand and align at a leadership level on that simple statement of where we are and where we need to go. And everybody, every individual person around that leadership table will have a different perspective on what change is required, what the priorities are, and what needs to happen first in order to achieve them. And that difference of opinion is both healthy and utterly understandable, as well as being most often overlooked, right? Because it's just too easy to assess one or other of any, you know, any number of half a dozen key performance indicators. Are we doing well commercially? Great. Therefore, everyone must be comfortable. Are we doing well creatively? Yes. Okay. Well, therefore, everything must be fine. Leave it as it is about the laziest leadership challenge, leadership approach that there might be. But you should never assume, and I certainly never do, that everybody's on the same page in regard to priorities and actions, or that everybody's on the same page with regard to the performance or opportunities across the business, or the development of new products and services, or that pitch deck, right? You know, nodding and smiling at the pitch deck, global credential story is easy. But the test is then, do people use it? And if the answer is no, they then edit it. That's why they want the keynote, not the PDF, because they want to change that word here or there. And so, you know, you get a quick sense of whether it's real or whether it's, you know, being tolerated. So leadership alignment and trust through change, building trust through journeys of change, you know, it's been a big part of my last few years. And I think it's something that can make a difference to the way in which agencies approach their own growth and evolution, and the way in which groups of people are brought together to kind of fight under the same banner and pull in the common direction.
So I guess there comes a point where there will be people that are sort of on the bus, as they say, and people that aren't on the bus. And, you know, I imagine naturally there'll be some, you know, some pretty organic attrition of people that are just, you know, good people, maybe in the wrong roles, and it's time for them to move on. And they probably are well aware of that. It's a safe space, don't worry. But there may be great people in any given business who, you know, perhaps are on one side of an aligned agreement as opposed to, you know, the new boss's side of that agreement. So I'm curious how you bring individuals with you when you really want them to be part of it, but perhaps they don't yet quite see, you know, see the agency through the same lens as you. So I'm curious if that's come up for you and maybe what you've learned about how to deal with it.
It's definitely come up because agencies are, you know, human organisms, right? Agency cultures, in my opinion, and it isn't shared by everyone, but agencies are fragile places because they're human beings and therefore they're fallible and emotional, and we all are. Recognizing that gives, you know, has always given me a pretty clear sense that communication is vital to the ongoing health and establishment of trust of any inside and across any leadership team in any creatively oriented business. So if you see potential stars, wherever they might sit in an organization at whatever level of seniority or experience, but people who are evidently on the bus, eager to jump on the bus, want to drive the bus, will be happy making drinks on the bus, whatever it is, wherever they sit, they need to be part of the conversation and feel like not only are they being listened to, but they have a voice, that they have their say in the direction, the shape, the trajectory of the journey and how it's delivered. And that starts with just utter clarity on whatever you choose to call it, right? Your journey, your mission, your direction. For you, you know, Rob, again, the point on differentiation, what is the thing that makes us different? And I don't think you can over communicate that. You know, going through any kind of change or evolution, trying to achieve something positive, trying to make a difference, trying to improve a thing, the one thing out of 999 things that are going right, you've got one thing you can improve slightly, even if it's as minute as that. You cannot over communicate the necessity of and focus and the need to keep people aware of, engaged in, and at least from a distance, you know, feeling like they have a say. And then the most important thing then when they have the say is to listen, right? And show people again how listening and how their voices have informed the decisions that you take. And this is like, it happened quite a lot at the beginning, I say the beginning, like maybe the first 12 months or so of prior to this, prior to We Are Social, I was running Forshman and Bowden Force for 3 and a bit years. And there were wildly different views across that agency as to the necessity or the need of any kind for change. Because there were offices doing well, offices doing less well, offices making great work, offices making less great work. And it was in a state of kind of post-merger, grown very quickly globally through first a sale, then a merger, and not enough attention had been paid to the story. Even though key elements of the story, key elements of the agency were both easy to identify, broadly held, and frankly, stuff to be proud of, like stuff to celebrate and really surface, hang your hat on. And I was quite proud eventually. Probably it took no longer than 9 months, maybe 12, when some people in the agency, certain groups, and these are all fantastic people, fantastic talent, would say that, wow, that we're seeing that slide again. You don't need to present that slide. And it was a sort of single slide view on where we were trying to go and why, right? This sort of strategy diluted. The best of the agency, if you like, in a single, simple, clear commitment. And when people started to get bored of it, that's when I felt great about the impact it was having, right? Because then if people are getting bored, some people are getting bored, and there's always attrition in agencies, there's always turnover of staff, you know, whatever, 20% is kind of held to be quite good. So you've always got new people. So for every person that was seeing that slide of mine for the 20th time, there was someone seeing it for the first time. And that gives you a chance eventually to speak to everyone. That's really powerful. And it's what I mean about these assets living in organizations. You know, if you walk around an agency and say, hey, what do you think our vision is? Or what are we here to do? What are you here to do? You want to get some kind of vague consistency of answer. They need to be the exact same words in the same order. You don't want people to be parroting a phrase that you know has been sort of forced upon them. But you want broadly people to say the same kinds of things for the same kinds of reasons. And when you've got to that point, you might not have completely and entirely differentiated yourself from everyone. You might not be in a category of one, Rob, but you might be pretty damn close to it. You stand a good chance, right? But without doing that, you have no chance. You're hoping people come together, stay together, and do things for the same reasons. And hope is not a strategy, and nor does it, you know, no matter how good you are, it doesn't, or how great the work is you're doing, it doesn't guarantee ongoing success.
I'm reminded of that apocryphal story about JFK visiting, I guess, what was Cape Canaveral at the time, and supposedly asking the janitor, and what do you do? Well, sir, I help put man on the moon. And it's a lovely thought, and it's a lovely sort of articulation of that sense of shared you know, shared endeavor, if you like. But I suppose there's something else that's really curious about what you said. I'd love to pick up on is it's language that we use in agencies. I think when we have these very sort of monolithic phrases, this is our positioning, it means this, you phrase it like that, it makes it so much harder for everybody in the business because they've got to learn lines. And, you know, the idea that you could ask the janitor or the receptionist or the chief client officer or anybody else to kind of play back, what is it that you think we're really trying to do here? They're immediately on a shit, it's a test. I might get it wrong. And particularly if they're not naturally extroverted or if they're neurodivergent or if they just don't really see themselves as salespeople per se, you're kind of making life much harder for you. So I think when we do, to your point, when you do sort of distill down that kind of, you know, the business strategy really into some simple language, I think it's much, much more healthy to sort of use these building blocks or core business decisions, we call them within Codefinery, but to put them together in what we call a narrative. So yes, it's still a reflection of the business strategy, still encompasses a value proposition, a positioning statement, a point of view, but it's a story. And the reason that we use narrative is because I think it's very similar to a fairy story. You know, you and I could, we could both tell the story of Goldilocks to different audiences at different times. You know, there might be different ages. We might have props and puppets. We might tell that story completely differently, but we'd still get the major beats of the story across and we'd still get that narrative and the value of the story across. And I think that's valuable because if you're, you know, an agency, you know, client service director, and you're having a difficult negotiation with a procurement lead, you might have a different way of framing that narrative versus if you're, I don't know, you know, the CEO of a new potential client who doesn't really have the marketing language and frankly doesn't want to hear that kind of language, you might phrase, you know, the story in a very different way. And I think being able to bake that flexibility in by getting, you know, real clarity into the decisions that you've taken as an agency, it means that if you're going and talking to a private equity company trying to secure investment, you know, you'll be using a very different set of language to another context, and the story doesn't change. It's still the same business strategy. You're still able to articulate where you win, what you're good at, and why people should give a shit.
Well, the other thing that narrative does is cross cultures and languages. A narrative story is easier to translate than a handful of English language words, which mean different things in different parts of England, let alone taking an English language word to Sweden or French-speaking Canada or Vietnam or Singapore or mainland China or Japan. Right? We forget that frequently as well. You know, as soon as you've done this kind of work across different geographies, you realize that it's the narrative stuff that translates, not the individual words. Right? People can do their own translation and they put their own color on that Goldilocks story, quite rightly. And if you protect centrally and tell people there's only one way, it's not bears, right? We're going to choose a different protagonist, a different family of animals. You fuck it up. You lose the magic. I don't care whether that JFK Cape Canaveral story is true. I've heard it told 100 times. I will never tire of hearing it. I've never heard anyone in a room say, well, that's fucking bullshit. I don't believe that. Because you're not talking about the janitor and the moon mission. You're talking about the importance of whether or not a message inside an organization translates and the ambition and optimism built into that mission means something to people. That's the test. And if you don't want it to, that says something about you. And if you don't care, that says something else about you. And if you're not happy with either the extent to which that message translates, or you're not prepared to make sure that it does, you're probably in the wrong place. And so that's another way in a really, and this is healthy, by the way, you know, you want everyone on the bus when you're going through change. Doesn't matter if you're an agency or an accountancy practice or a holding company or a client, you want people on the bus, but you must accept that not everybody who has the chance of getting on the bus will accept the invitation. And that there might be some people on the bus that aren't right for the mission. And there might be others that you need to bring onto the bus that are totally against it. All of those jobs are important. And understanding the diversity of views and opinions and encouraging people one way or the other to decide for themselves whether change is for them, that's the leadership skill as well. And it's a leadership muscle that is not strong in many creative businesses, because few leaders in creative businesses have ever had to do it.
Tell me more about that.
Well, I just think that's there's creative agencies usually started by creative people. That was true as in, you know, the people that make the work, write it, draw it, film it, whatever it is. And that's exactly as it should be. And it's also why forever it will be the case, I hope, that it is those individuals with those kinds of skills and capabilities who are, as we were saying earlier, the people that we celebrate and put on pedestals, right? The people that are magnets for talent, for work, for clients, who clearly and consistently are behind work that leads the way, or that people, you know, would hold up as helping move the whole industry forward. And it isn't always the case that leadership or management skills, if you want to call them that, are either celebrated or understood. That's very good for me, right? Because I'm a kind of frustrated art student that had to study economics. And I don't have that kind of gift, right? That sort of creative spark or talent. But I love being around those kinds of people. I know a little bit about economics and how businesses run. I know a little bit about how people think and work. And that means that I can help those kinds of people, the really gifted ones, move their businesses forward in some kind of more productive direction, help them grow, help them build deeper relationships with clients, help them understand or remove problems from them, right? What are the problems that sort of unfair to pick on them? But I'm not going to pick on any individuals unless you really push me, or I can't think of a better example. But if I think about my experiences, I knew what I could do when I went to Forsman & Bowden Fools was help Anna Kvennerstedt, who'd been in the business a really long time, who is one of those impossibly gifted creative people who found themselves in a position of both authority, leadership, and influence, and was clearly, and had for a long time, because of that influence and authority and seniority, had to be doing things that she didn't love doing. She could do them, but I could take the things off of her that she didn't necessarily love doing, and perhaps even would acknowledge wasn't necessarily great at. So I could help Anna do the things she was great at and loved doing more of the time. And that's the task. I'm very comfortable taking away from those kinds of people the things that they don't necessarily need to, want to be doing, have been told to do, or want to do. And that's a management talent, a management gift that I can bring to that conversation. And taking, you know, it's sort of management and leadership is insulation. And I'm super comfortable as a layer of insulation, protection, and support for people with gifts and talents that I couldn't possibly ever hope to have. And I like that, right? I like that.
It's a lovely gift to the organization and, you know, more broadly to the world. The word I was sort of had buzzing around my head was empowerment. You know, what I'm hearing is a big part of your job as a leader, and insulation is a lovely way of putting it, but it's you're enabling the people to do the thing that they're really good at. My wife has a lovely phrase on this. She talks about optimizing for joy. And I think the more that we can all sort of edit out the bits of our lives and our, particularly our working lives, and even the bits of every day that don't bring us joy, or more, maybe more practically, to find ways of bringing joy into those tasks, whether it's doing the washing up, that allow us to just be sort of energized and kind of enthused by the things that we do, rather than, oh, I've got to do this. It's my penance for doing the thing I really do want to do. And enabling the people around us to really kind of, particularly in a system, like you say, a kind of human system, like an agency, to enable those people that have got those supreme talents to do the thing that they're best at, which creates most value for everybody else. It's a sort of snowball effect, isn't it?
I couldn't agree more. And it's a, you know, I got the easiest, most enjoyable performance review discussion I ever had. I was at McCann World Group. Suzanne Powers, the president and chief strategy officer, was looking after me, in charge of my development and progress and all of those things. And she asked for no prep work other than to complete with words or bullet points in a four-box grid. The four boxes, you know, the axes were how much you love doing it and how good are you at it. And so you had to fill the box, right? What are the things you're doing that you don't really like doing it and you're not very good at it, you know? And then the top right corner, things you love doing and are great at. And I got into the room with her. There was no drama, but I did that work. It was quite fun and also tough, because being honest and self-reflective about the things you are not good at and don't like doing with your boss is quite hard. Because of her approach to that conversation, she actually made it incredibly easy and taught me a lot along the way without telling me she was teaching me a lesson. And she just took a Sharpie and scribbled out three boxes. Let's just focus on these things that you'll love at, you're great at, and you'll love doing, except for that one, because I don't think you're great at that. And that was completely fine as well. But it just gave me a sense that, okay, this is leadership, right? Giving people tasks that you know they don't engage with emotionally or intellectually, and where they're subpar in terms of performance or talent or experience in delivering, is empowering for everyone, right? It's empowering for that leader who they no longer have to mark your shitty homework. And it's empowering for the person because you feel like your leader is taking tough things away from you and still supporting you to do more of the things that you're good at and love doing. And that since that day, and I'm going to try and date it, right? So that's 2017. I don't necessarily always use the four box grid, but I've used that setup, that premise with everyone I work with and care about. It doesn't forget the level. It's not even if I'm reviewing them or part of their performance review. It's people, the talent spotting thing that we touched on earlier, right? It's the people who you want and maybe can't even explain why, but there's something in them that makes you want them on the bus, or something they've done or attached to. Those special people are the people who really need the most guidance and the most focus on doing the things they're great at and love doing, because you, your organization, your agency needs more of that and only that. And if that's what you've got, a bunch of talented people, whatever function or experience level they have, wherever they sit in the world, if more of your people, as many of your people as possible, are only doing things that they're great at and love doing, you will succeed. Things will be better. You will win the next pitch. You will grow that client because it creates a shared sense of optimism and enthusiasm and belief and space. It's a freeing conversation. And to get to high performance, you need as many people doing as much of that as possible and as few people as possible doing stuff that they don't enjoy and aren't good at. And that could be something really simple, like timesheets. No one enjoys time reporting. So then you go back to, okay, so how are we pricing? Are we differentiating in our commercial modeling? Do we have any opportunity to push, flex, or change things here? I wholeheartedly believe that timesheets for creatively oriented businesses are a problem, a challenge, a headache for everyone.
That's a whole other conversation.
There are other factors that drive the necessity in some places for timesheets. But all my points of evidence are that if you fix the source, you don't need to worry about this cause and effect, right?
Yeah. 100%. Toby, I love that. I think it's such an energizing articulation. In fact, over this whole conversation, really, about the role of optimism and the importance of helping people shine within the fragility of this thing we call creativity, and you know, however we define creativity, you know, whether you're a coder or whether you're a writer or any other discipline you care to mention. But I love the way that you've really kind of brought some clarity on how to step into those kind of senior leadership roles, how to define what's important, and how to bring people with you, because the outcome of that you've just articulated is so powerful. It's not a recipe for success, but it's going to take you a long way. And it really chimes with my own point of view, which is that, you know, I've been doing what I do a long time, and I've yet to meet an agency that doesn't have it within them to really succeed and to be seen as different and to enjoy the work they do and to be paid fairly. It's not just a question of kind of wanting it, but as long as they enable the people to be involved in the decision-making and make clear, you know, distinctions about where they win and then pursue it with real clarity, then there's nothing stopping them getting in the way. And I think what you've articulated is really the subtlety, if you like. It's the glue that makes that happen. So yeah, if you can insulate people and if you can help empower them to do the things that they're amazing at, then you won't go far wrong as a leader. I think it's a fantastic story. Toby, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Really great to chat to you, Rob, as always.
Brilliant. I feel like we could have gone on for a long, long time, but maybe we'll do part two another time.
Thanks for listening today. Hopefully you've got at least one really useful takeaway. If so, I'd love to hear from you. Connect with me, Robin Bond, on LinkedIn, or drop me an email at robin.bond@codefinery.com. Now, it's podcast law that I compel you to subscribe to the show, so please do. And if you're happy to share this episode and help us reach a wider audience, thank you. I'll personally buy you a pint. Finally, if you're new to Codefinery, then here's the plug. We combine consulting sprints and executive coaching to help agencies like yours create your very own market of one. That means you can stand out, win more, and command a premium, all while attracting the best talent and really thriving in your role. So if you're curious to learn more, drop us a line by the link in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.